Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hi. How are you? Hello. Is it me all looking for? You know, I've been practicing that all morning. You didn't even tell me you knew it was coming. I was feeling Lionel Richie this morning. I feel
okay,
it.
Okay, well, channel Lionel. I like me some Lionel. So, all the things are going on, and I don't really know where to begin. Should we begin with the fact that Steve McQueen has gotten the rights to do a Tupac documentary?
Okay, Steve, but okay.
Can we? We'll talk more about that when we know more. But I just know.
You had that one up your sleeve. I just know. A magic trick.
I just know it's going to be. Like, he has the full permissions and everything. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Should we talk about the fact that Diddy was stunting on them mms? Because with his $800-odd million value, he is the richest man in hip hop.
Diddy?
Yes, Diddy's been the richest man in hip hop.
Okay.
Dre thought because he sold his little beats or something, he was about to. Nope. Diddy said, no. Thank you. I am still the king.
I thought I told you that we won't stop.
Diddy. He won one back. You know, we're still waiting for him to come out ever since he did the things at Beyonce's birthday party. Anytime you're ready, Diddy, just come on over to this side. But he definitely did that when he cut certain said folks out of his picture.
I don't know. Somebody was talking about Diddy that said he arrived to the party in a helicopter. But like, what kind of magical pimpdom is he living in? Like,
he arrived to the party in a helicopter
left in a speedboat, girl. A speedboat. Like, what's the Miami Vice type situation? Really? Yes. Like, I have places to be, and I'm not confined to whatever the mode of transportation I want. It just happens. It appears before me. Like, what needs to happen?
So we don't need a Bow Wow challenge. We need a Diddy challenge.
Obviously, because, like, what is his personal assistant doing? Like, I'm going to need me a helicopter. Yes. And then in 3 hours later, I need a speedboat. No, a helicopter, not a return flight. No. I don't need a return. It's a one way. Because then we're going to take a submarine. And just see the story. Like, what is he doing? He's doing
more than Bow Wow because Bow Wow got called out trying to post pictures of being on that private jet.
He got called out on
a commercial flight. Okay, but in all seriousness, there are some highlights that we could talk about this week. For example, the MTV Movie and TV Awards. I don't know why we had to change like a good thing. The MTV Movie Awards, they were great. Now we got MTV Movie and TV Awards, but okay. They were on Sunday and there were two winners that I was really excited about because, you know, me and awards. The first was for the best kiss. And it was 21-year-old Ashton and 19-year-old Jarrell, the two cuties from Moonlight. I know you might be tired of my talking about Moonlight, but hey, I don't know that it's going to end anytime soon. The two guys won. They went up to accept their award and together. And they just, the love between them and the message that they had for all of us. Jarrell first was like, I love my parents. I want to thank my parents. I love y'all. But they also went on to say that, Ashton went on to say that the award is bigger than both of them and that it represents more than a kiss. Quote, this is for those who feel like the unders, the misfits. This represents us. We love y'all and thank y'all. End quote. And Jarrell encouraged minority performers to step out of the box, do whatever it takes to tell the story and make the change. What do you think?
I love it. I mean, like, first of all, they're amazing actors. If you haven't seen Moonlight, go see Moonlight. I'm a stan for Moonlight. Love me some Moonlight. Amazing actors. And I felt very strongly that they could connect to these characters on a deeper level. And it's true. We are specifically confined by stereotypes and ideas about what masculinity, specifically Black masculinity, needs to look like. Mm-hmm. And that means that there's certain truths that haven't been told. Moonlight was able to go beyond that. And I'm glad that these actors have embraced their role in doing so. So, yeah, I'm happy.
Absolutely. Happy. And then in other great news, Representative Maxine Waters, we like to call her Auntie, alongside, well, Tracy Ellis Ross introduced Representative Waters. And then they were there to announce, I think this is a new award. I've never heard this award before. The award category, Best Fight Against the System. And there were a few contenders that actually I was like, oh, yeah, I can see some of those, like Mr. Robot. I know you're a Mr. Robot fan. But no, nope. Hidden Figures won. And Taraji P. Henson was there to take the award on behalf of the cast. And, you know, Taraji is, I like Taraji and her unscripted. I do. But I want to ask you about something. Taraji said, quote, the message of the movie is togetherness. I hate the separateness. I hate that it's man versus woman, black versus white, gay versus straight, whatever. We're all humans, right? End quote. And now I know Taraji is down, so don't get me wrong. I understand that. But is that not a little all lives matter? A little bit? Because Chili, you know, Chili and T-Boz, they on tour right now trying to garner some attention for their album that's about to come out. And Chili actually used the words all lives matter.
Good going, Chili. Good going.
She said, yeah, you know, in this situation, it's been like a bunch of black men and boys getting killed by the police. But, you know, in other situations, it could be white boys. It's all bad.
It's all bad. Lives matter is that it shines a light and it helps people to a severe injustice, specifically police brutality in the black community. And so people are getting hip to it. They're very new to activism, very, very new to social justice. They hadn't really thought about these issues, at least on a grand scale, in their lives before. The hard thing about it is that for people that are much more well-versed in social justice issues, for people that have been in the fight for a long time, watching people who are new have a very public process. And that's what happens all the time. People don't come in with a PhD on this stuff. People don't come in having a full understanding of how the context within which they are operating. So a lot of people see an All Lives Matter statement on its face and they think, well, that's true, right? We're all humans and all lives matter. And they don't see that, wow, within this context, it's like going to a breast cancer benefits and saying all illnesses matter, right? Like, it's just, it's not appropriate. Like, if we're talking about this, let's talk about this. And so, you know, people are having their process. And I think what ends up happening is that they get piled on and sometimes they're defensive about that. Or sometimes they come back on it and it expands they expand their knowledge on it. I mean, like Francesca Ramsey, for example, once when she had her shit white girl say to black girls, then she went on Anderson Cooper and an audience member said, well, is this stuff racism? And she said, no, this isn't racism. Right. And she got piled on. But beyond that, able to get knowledge out of that. And it's also a testament to who she is. She deepened her knowledge. She went further into it. And if she were to give a response to that question today, it would be very different because she's a different person and where she is in her process. I think we need to just let people have their little process.
Okay.
Like what Chili has ever talked about, you know, and Taraji, I love me some Taraji, but like she speaks really plainly about certain things candidly and on one that's extremely refreshing. On the other hand, it's like, you know, not everybody can be
Viola Davis.
Right. Yeah. Not everybody can be media coached like what's his name? You saw that interview. You know what I'm talking about. Like Little Yachty.
Oh.
Not everybody can be media ready like Little Yachty. Yes.
Okay. In other news. At the beginning of the month, and I know we're not that far into the month, but at the beginning of the month, there was an announcement at Bethune-Cookman University. Quote, much like Dr. Bethune, founder of Bethune-Cookman University, Secretary DeVos deems the importance of opportunity and hope for students to receive an exceptional education experience. Her mission to empower parents and students resonates with the history and legacy of Dr. Bethune. End quote. That was the announcement to say that Betsy DeVos, the new Secretary of Education would be offering the commencement speech at the historically Black university, Bethune-Cookman University, founded by Mary McLeod Bethune.
Mm-hmm.
The craziness about this is, in February, Betsy DeVos was the person who tried to talk about HBCUs in, what does she say? That they are the epitome of school choice, something that she is fighting for, reflecting her lack of historical context and why HBCUs were founded in the first place. It has nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with school choice and everything to do with the fact that people were not allowed to go to school. So, of course, this
Black people were not allowed to go to school.
So, of course, people were tripping. And there was a change.org petition that garnered more than 50,000 signatures. It didn't change anything. And this week, good old Betsy showed up and tried to give her commencement speech. And she was, you know, confronted with a lot of boos. Many students stood up and turned around with their backs to her, didn't want to listen. Eventually, president of the school stood up that, you know, if how do you want to do this? Do you want to have your diplomas mailed to you? Or are you going to sit here and listen? And students continued to boo, but because either way, as someone pointed out, your diplomas get mailed to you. But President Dr. Edison O. Jackson, he stood by his decision to have the Secretary of Education at commencement. And the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, gave a formal statement. And she said she has the greatest respect, supposedly, for the students who booed her and said that's okay because we have to learn to accept and listen and respect the ideas of others, even if we don't agree with them. What do you think?
Well, she's setting it up. I mean, like, this whole thing is a setup, just like the picture in the Oval Office with the HBCU leaders was a setup. It's setting up these optics for this really cynical move to move back to a time before Brown versus the Board of Education, right? And probably even a worse time because they want to move into a time where they actually remove all federal funding for any level of entitlements that allow us to have any kind of educational equality. So the fact that the president of Bethune-Cookman would be simple enough to let himself get caught up in that scheme is unfortunate, but it's not surprising. As we know, there are a lot of people that see their own, you know, they subvert the message of a Bethune-Cookman, they subvert the message of a Martin Luther King or a Nelson Mandela to basically mean, well, you know, they were fighting for white people to be racist. So white people could exclude us. And it's like, no, I don't think that's not what they were fighting for. And they're dead. So they're not here to speak for themselves. But their entire legacy speaks to a fight for justice for marginalized people, for Black people, to educate ourselves. And Betty DeVos' entire career is about not doing that. And not just Black people. She's disenfranchising disabled students, trans students, LGBT students, right? Like, dismantle Title IX. She wants to dismantle all enforcement for any level of equality that has been reached by women and minorities within education for the last 50 years. And this is who you bring? Mm-hmm. To a HBCU?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't, I'm confused as to the move. I'm confused so as to the move. Especially in the wake of the last 2 to 4 years of protests around campuses. Black students at Harvard University, on the other hand, have rallied together. They've raised $27,000 to pay for a ceremony and reception for their own commencement. And that will take place on May 23rd. More than 170 students and 530 guests have confirmed their attendance to an all-Black commencement. And that's happening at Harvard. Obviously, Harvard has been a part of those institutions that is predominantly white and has had to act with their minority students to rectify certain things, going back to their imperialist and racist past, and also to confront the everyday diversity issues and microaggressions that students face now. So why is it that Harvard is having an all-Black commencement, of course, organized by its Black students, and a Black Edison, president of a Black school in Daytona Beach, Florida, feels it necessary to, like, not just do something, but, like, go out of his way
way to ruin graduation for many students. Ruin it. Ruin it. I mean, like, the whole point of a commencement speech is that you bring someone who has achieved something in their life. This is someone who was just confirmed, like, yesterday.
Right. And has no experience in education.
She's, like, looking at her career.
Confirmed in a position that she has no experience in.
She was just, she basically was confirmed to pave the way for the dismantling of what we know to be the Department of Education.
Right. I don't understand it, but.
I understand it completely. It's sadly for this person, I don't know much about the president of Bethune-Cookman, but I imagine he's accomplished some things, but this will go down in his legacy of him being like one of the most basic Negro moves ever, which is it is a flexing of the government's power. And what's interesting about how the American government under Trump now flexes its power is that they insist on people and institutions placating them, kowtowing to them. You come to the office, I promise you something, but all I'm doing is a photo op. That's what happened with the HBCU leaders. You know, you get 5 minutes to talk, but I'm not committing to anything that you say and want. And then they just came out within this week with some rhetoric that essentially hints at them destabilizing the funding for HBCUs altogether. So they're really clear, but they don't have any allegiance to the people that placate them. See, they require you to kowtow to them. They require allegiance from, you know, they were the ones talking about how they want to do a loyalty test of the governmental employees and started talking about whistleblowing and leaks as treason and things like that. But then they don't have any kind of loyalty if you placate them, if you try to play nice with them. So it, part of what is hindering resistance right now is the veneer of civility, in my opinion, is this idea that we're looking at autocratic state and that we still have to play nice. We still have to invite you to the dance. We still have to act like we like you. And we still have to sort of defer to your authority, even though it's a legitimate and an abused authority. And that's exactly what he's doing. And to take a more cynical approach, we don't know what he's getting in personally on the back end of this. What we saw with the attorney general in Florida was that her kickback was very real. So we see that often is that the kickback for kowtowing to this administration is a very real, very sort of thing. That's how they play. So I don't even, like, I'm not the investigative journalist that's going to uncap that. But if I was at Bethune-Cookman, I would be like, you know what? Maybe you need to go. You have no authority. Like Maxine Waters, like, you have no credibility. You need to go. Yeah. So let's see how it plays out. I'm really concerned about HBCUs in general because as a former student of HBCU, one of the things I know is that much of the leadership at HBCUs are very old guard that are not necessarily prepared to take the radical stances that are necessary for them to take to protect those institutions and to protect the students under their institution. So this is something that we have protested within HBCUs about for a very long time, is the corruption, inefficiency, whatever, people just basically in a holding pattern around whatever their individual position is without seeing students as a priority. And now we see that playing into this historical moment in a very sad way. We'll see what that means for the future of HBCUs.
In our second segment, this week is Mental Health Awareness Week in the UK, and it's Mental Health Awareness Month in the US. And I just wanted to take some time to discuss what some of the greatest challenges are concerning mental health right now for Black queer folk, and what are some best practices. I will say I just saw the extended preview of Orange is the New Black, the new season, the thing that you don't watch. And I was
Too sensitive.
And I was like, I might need to talk to somebody after this season. Like, last season was already hard enough, but this season, I don't know if I'm ready. Look,
all I know is they killed off my girlfriend, so I don't need to mess with them no more.
What? My girlfriend.
That's my girlfriend, and that's my wife. And so I need you to stop hating on me just because that's how we get down. And now she in a handmaid's tale, so don't be hating on me.
Okay.
Let that go. Yes, you let that go. Go ahead and let it go. Shoot.
So just
all up in my dreamscape. All up in my dreamscape.
But from you know, obviously we talk about federal level politics and so forth. But on a daily level, there are a lot of positive things that we have to embrace. While at the same time we have a lot of challenges that we face on the everyday. So what are some of the greatest challenges right now when it comes to mental health awareness? What are the things that people need to hear so that they know, oh, okay, I'm not the only one?
Well, I think one of the things that came to me about this after having deeper conversations with people is how common it is. It's a very common thing to have mental health issues, especially for people on the margins of society. I think my personal opinion is that given some of the things that some of us have to deal with, mental health issues are a logical and normal outcome of some of those conditions. It's not so much that I think people struggle with the idea that they're flawed somehow, that, you know, biologically, genetically, against nature. And so if they could just get XYZ in position, that they wouldn't have this issue. But the reality is that the conditions that we live under are completely oppressive and unnatural. And so it's a logical outcome for us to have and need help coping with those conditions. So it's everyone that I've talked to that's had a mental health issue somehow feel isolated because they feel like they are the only one. That this issue, it's almost like survivor's guilt. Like they feel like, you know, I don't have the right to have this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I should just be counting my blessings. I have a good education. I have this, I have that. Why do I now have this issue? And I'm like, yo, have you listened to yourself tell your story? Like, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It is a lot. I wonder, though, let me be old school for a minute and gain a lot of enemies.
Gain your enemies, devil advocate.
So there was a time where, you know, people didn't use the term mental health. Right. And there was a time where it wasn't mental health, right? That's just how things were. You know, you either needed to man up, suck it up, be an adult, whatever. Now that there's openness around mental health issues, and there is more mental health awareness, is the term overused? People who experience, you know, anxiety in finding a job, or anxiety about exams, or anxiety about how they're going to pay the bills, is that mental health? Or isn't that just like, that's life? That's not just life? Why do we need to call it mental health?
Yeah, I mean, when something speaks directly to your experience, there's such a power in seeing your experience reflected, to know that this is something that actually happens to people besides yourself, especially if it's a hard thing. And we know that as queer people, when we see our lives reflected, it resonates with us almost on a spiritual level. We feel very uplifted by the reflection because there's this sense that we don't exist. Our reflections don't exist, right? Like that we're these kind of like shadow people that don't really have this reflection of our lives. So within mental health, I mean, I remember I saw a description of something that I was going through. And, you know, usually when these descriptions for mental health come out, they like lay out the symptoms and they lay out, you know, all of the things. And I was just like, exactly, exactly, exactly. And I was just like, wow, that is a thing. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's caused by. And so then I could learn more about it. I could learn about ways to put a name to what I'm dealing with. I don't speak English no more. I had a friend, I had a gathering of Black people in Vienna last night. And then a friend pulled me aside and asked to walk me home and was telling me about an experience. And when I was reflecting back to him, what I saw within that experience, it was just a very powerful moment because there's, you get a level of understanding that you can't have when you're within that experience. So all this new prevalence of mental health terms is doing is shining a light on things that always existed. It's just that they always existed, but we never had terms for it. But that happens with all manner of health things. You know, TB existed before the term TB existed, right? Germs existed before we knew what germs were.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time with science, and it's just happening with mental health as well.
And what would you say some of the best practices are that we could use in order to not simply survive, but also thrive, live, enjoy, appreciate?
Why are you asking me that? Like,
because you say I'm too spiritual. So
what you say?
Because you say I'm too spiritual. You don't even come to my meditation. So I don't have.
You know,
any
I can't meditate. Like, why are you asking someone who does not have the ability to meditate?
Because that is completely false. There's no such thing as having the ability to meditate. But staying away from the meditation session will not get you any closer.
No, I'm not a very good example of best practices. I'm a good example of worst practices. I mean, I just stumble through. I keep calm and carry on. I mean, so what I can only tell you what I've done in my own life, coming out of deep patches. One of the things that has been helpful for me to kind of get me out of like a paralysis is to plan everything out. That's something that is super necessary for me. If I'm not planning everything out, sometimes I kind of get into an anxiety spiral, or make time for my passions. So right now, like, my gardening game is on fleek. you come by, taste of my mango, some of my basil. And, you know, I'm doing my music, I'm doing things that I'm extremely passionate about. And that takes me out of a place where I go into anxiety spirals around other things. I think that right now, Alexis Pauline Gums hit me to a term called, I don't know if she coined it, called internalized capitalism. And essentially it's this idea that unless what we're doing with our time is creating money, is creating a job or something like that, and it's creating a lot of money, that somehow we don't value it. So if we value these jobs that give us a lot of money, even though they might wreak emotional havoc on ourselves, or, you know, so we have a passion like gardening that, of course, creates no money, we neglect it. We don't make time for it. We say, that's me being frivolous. And we need to sort of come up with a value system where we value things outside of the context of money, outside of the context of how other people see us as valuable, and value them for what they give us emotionally, what they give us in terms of our sense of well-being.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
So why don't you start?
I have to start?
Yes, you have to start because you be hating on all my stuff. So
I don't hate on your stuff.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so there have been a lot of release dates for June. I don't think I'm going to have time for anybody or anything because I'm going to be watching Orange is the New Black. I believe Wonder Woman is scheduled to come out in June.
Correct.
I'm going to see Alien Covenant tonight.
You don't like life.
What?
I
was reviewing.
I'm not there to hold your hand. I'm just letting you know you're doing it alone.
I was reviewing the old Alien footage a couple of weekends ago. Had like a little Alien marathon. And I was like, if these bees would have been listening to our doctor, Sigourney Weaver, the whole time, they wouldn't have to make these movies. Every time. She was like, no, don't do that. Keep them outside. Don't let it happen. And he was like, no, we can't do that. Nah, we got to bring them back in. Nah. And I was like, man, y'all could have cut this series short if y'all would have just listened to the woman.
Sigourney Weaver is every woman everywhere. Like, every professional woman. Like, all right, cool. She deformed by attorney general.
So I'm really excited about a lot of things coming up. I haven't watched Dear White People yet. I've kind of heard mixed reviews. Like, a lot of people are really into it, but I know that some people didn't really like it. So I'm really excited about just like the entertainment that I have to look forward to, but I never find the time for it. It's really hard. And just this weekend, I was thinking maybe I'll find some time to watch Dear White People. Should I watch it?
I'm not sold on it. Yeah.
Well, I know I've read some good things, and I've, but only obviously titles, because I don't go in to read spoilers. But I did read one title that said, Dear White People, the series is everything the movie wasn't and more.
Okay. I can respect that. But
that's a lot of size.
I don't know if I'm ready for it yet. Not ready. I'm definitely. Yes, I'm not ready.
What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Vienna is bringing it. We missed last week, so I can't give my recap of my orgasmic Michelle and Dago cello concert experience.
Oh, did she make it? Oh, okay. Well, I didn't have that kind of experience when I saw her last week, last year in concert. So let's move on.
She came out looking dusty. She did look dusty. She wrapped it up in that janitor's uniform. I really appreciate it. She came up in coveralls.
Yep.
And did the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, coveralls, Michelle? But okay. Do you, boo? No. Maybe we all, you know, I don't know. Like, look, if I could do the music like that, I think I'd just wear a burlap back too. I just, you know.
Okay.
And her drummer.
Yeah.
Where she found a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Her drummer was very on point. Anyway, so that happened. That's like a blast from the You Missed Me. So I have to tell you about it.
Okay.
Toots and the Maytals. Did you know they're going to be playing up the block from my house?
Oh, okay.
Toots on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
I know. So
stop
that's very
trying to sell Vienna. We're not moving there. Let's go on now.
Listen, you're missing out.
Nah.
Get out. Not every place could be London. I like my little Vienna town.
Okay.
So Toots and the Maytals is coming. I'm really excited about that. It's festival season in Vienna. I'm really excited about it. We have an Agnus festival. Yeah, you know, I'm excited about that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the one here that owns the Drindel. So I'm just saying that.
I own it, baby. I own several Drindels and I own Lederhosen. What you know? I look good in my shit. I know. Hey. I speak my dialect and drink my beer. What's up?
Okay.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have a spare dime, you can donate to our Patreon site, patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time.